Okay, this is Gary Parrish again, and this is the Eye on College Basketball podcast again. And I'm now talking to you on the morning of January 2nd, which makes this, I guess, the first Eye on College Basketball podcast of 2014. So happy new year to everybody. Should have a fun podcast today because my guest is Jason King, who's one of the very best dudes writing about college basketball. He's, of course, worked lots of places, among them the Kansas City Star, Yahoo Sports, ESPN. Recently made the move to Bleacher Report, where he's now the lead college basketball writer. And Jason is joining me today from Phoenix, Arizona, where he attended Wednesday night's Fiesta Bowl, said he could watch his alma mater, Baylor, play UCF. Obviously, that did not go well for Baylor fans. Jason, let's start right at the top. What happened to your Baylor Bears football team last night?
Oh, it was terrible. It was terrible. I tell you what, I think they were just arrogant and listened to all the hype and listened to all the people on TV saying that if there was one sure win in the bowl season, it was Baylor over UCF. And they got whipped. And, you know, when you lose a game, it's one thing, but to look so sloppy and ill-prepared, you know, they had 17 penalties for 135 yards. Their defense was exposed. And it was just a really bad look, I thought, for a team that won the Big 12 title and was maybe a win away from playing for a national championship or at least being in the mix for that spot. So a disappointing end to what was a historic season. But the only thing I will say, I do think UCF is really good.
They're pretty good, right?
Yeah, I mean, they beat Louisville on the road. I believe they beat Penn State, you know, lost to South Carolina by 4 points and their only loss of the season. So, you know, don't want to discredit them, but boy, Baylor was not ready to play.
Yeah, and so then as soon as the game's over, the conversation turns toward the future of Art Briles, who has become, you know, a star in coaching. It's so funny. When I was, just like once upon a time, you were the Kansas beat writer at the Kansas City Star. I was the Memphis beat writer at the Commercial Appeal, and I was sort of the backup. Like when I was 22, 23 years old, I was the backup University of Memphis football writer and the backup University of Memphis basketball writer. I did that for a year, and I still helped out with football throughout, you know, for a few years. And I just remember constantly writing about this high school coach named Art Briles, who was suddenly the coach at Houston, I guess it was at the time. And to see him go from that guy to this guy has been pretty remarkable. And now, you know, people wonder whether he's going to be the coach at Baylor next year. There could theoretically be an NFL opportunity. Texas seems like it's at least interested on some level. Do you expect Art Briles to be the coach at Baylor next year?
I do. And maybe that's just me hopeful as a Baylor Bear alumni. But I say that because last night there's a gentleman named Bob Simpson who co-owns the Texas Rangers, you know, a billionaire, contributes huge to Baylor. And he went up to Briles after the game last night and flat out asked him, you know, are you going to be back? And he said yes. And then, Bob Simpson told me that. And I just, you know, would hate to think that that wasn't true. But it is the University of Texas that's interested, and they're very interested. I think he and Charlie Strong are the top two candidates. But I think the reason Briles will be back, or the thing that's really going to be pulling at him, is, you know, one of his main goals ever since arriving at Baylor was to get a stadium built on campus. They have a really bad facility off campus, and they spent years raising money and generating support and enthusiasm, and now next year they're opening a new state-of-the-art facility right there on campus. He was, again, the main guy behind that, and he's got a great team coming back. I just think the timing's bad, and honestly, I think Texas is a bad fit for him simply because he's a small-town guy. He hates dealing with – I think he would hate the Longhorn Network. Sure. And all the politics. He's a real blue-collar country boy, and I just don't know how he – I think he would do great there and
sure.
win. I just don't know if he would like it. But, you know, at the same time, I mean, coaches have egos, and they like the challenge of going in and fixing bad situations. And again, some consider that maybe the best job in all of college football. So if he goes, part of me says I can't blame him, but I just think there's something in his character and again, the timing that would maybe cause him to stay right now. But nothing, you know how these things go. I mean, nothing would surprise me at this point. I mean, I heard Roy Williams, you know, back in 2000 say after he turned down
sure.
Carolina that he'd retire at Kansas. And then 3 years later, he was gone. So I never rule anything out.
The funny thing to me, or the remarkable thing to me, is that in 1999, this guy was a high school football coach. That wasn't like 1999 when he was 25 years old. He was 44 years old and a high school football coach. I mean, by the time you're 44 years old, you kind of are what you are. You know, if you're going to be a high school football coach, that's what you're going to be. I mean, the idea that you could be 44 and a high school football coach and then turn into possibly the leading candidate at the University of Texas after leading Baylor to a Fiesta Bowl is just a remarkable career transition. I mean, you don't see stuff like that very often, if at all.
Yeah, no kidding. And, I think he was just so innovative even in high school. I mean, 20 years ago, I mean, you weren't seeing these offenses that were going out and scoring 60 and 70 points a game and, quarterbacks, rolling up, 400 and 500 yard games routinely. And, his system was just kind of ahead of its time. And, he went to Texas Tech for a year or two under Mike Leach, and then was at Houston and where he coached Kevin Cobb and some other good guys. And then he had RG3 at Baylor, and that really kind of put him on the map. And, it'd be hard. I don't want to say it's unparalleled because it's certainly not, but I mean, I just can't imagine there are many coaches that are as beloved in their town like he is in Waco. And I just think that, I mean, I joke that they should name this new stadium like Briles Griffin Stadium or something, just put some pressure on the guy to stay. They didn't do that, but maybe they should have, because I know there's a lot of Baylor fans, despite what was said last night, that are going to be sweating this out until the very end.
Of course. Okay, let's talk some basketball, because this is, after all, the Eye on College Basketball podcast. While we're on the subject of Baylor, let's start there. The Bears are 11-1. They're ranked ninth in the AP poll heading into Friday's game. I guess it's against Savannah State. This, of course, comes after making the Elite Eight two of the past four seasons. I wrote a column a month or so ago about Scott Drew, and I call what he's doing one of the greatest rebuilding jobs in the history of college basketball. Honestly, as I've looked at it more and more, I think it might be the best in the history of college basketball. Again, you're a Baylor graduate, so you have a better grasp on the history of things around that university than I do, than most people do. What do you make of the job Scott's done in Waco?
I do think it's one of the best. I mean, there's some phenomenal rebuilding jobs. I mean, I remember I did a big story on Lute Olson when he retired, and everyone, I don't think people realized how bad of a shape that program was in when he took over years ago. But this is different because, for one, you had a school with no tradition and a school where, a murder had taken place on campus, one teammate killed by another, their reputation was terrible, and no one wanted that job. I mean, for him to come in and have to go through a season where they weren't even allowed to play non-conference games, and they're recruiting against Texas, who was doing really well at the time, and then when Billy Gillespie was at A&M and they were rolling, I mean, he had a lot stacked against him, and now for the past 4 or 5 years they've been the best team in Texas and one of the better teams nationally. And I think, to just, again, it's one of those deals to truly appreciate where they are, you have to consider where they've been, and they were about as low as you could get.
Scott used to, and I've talked to Scott about this, I've actually written about it, so it's not like we're telling secrets here. Other Big 12 coaches would sort of roll their eyes at him. He's sort of a, I like the guy. I mean, let's be very clear. I like him. It's among the reasons I wrote that column. But, other coaches sort of have rolled their eyes at him in the past. Do you think we've reached a point where those guys, whoever they are, we don't have to name them, are taking him more seriously now than they used to?
I think that he's earned their respect. I think maybe they still don't think he's the best in-game coach, or maybe they don't, get along great with him personally or like him that much personally. But I think that they're at the point now that they just kind of have to tip their hat to the guy and say, he works his tail off on the recruiting trail. He's doing it consistently, and at some point, what are you going to say? I mean, they just beat Kentucky the other day for the second year in a row. I mean, they've beaten Kansas in some big games. So I think he's here to stay. I mean, and the thing about Scott is, too, and to me, I think Josh Pastner was in this situation, too. I mean, when Josh got that job at Memphis, he was 31. Scott was in his, I believe, low 30s, mid-30s when he took that Baylor job and had only been a head coach 1 year. They're learning just like these players are. I mean, he's a much better coach now than he was 10 years ago. He would do some things in games and still does from time to time that just make me scratch my head. But, coaches get better just like players get better. And so I think he's growing and evolving and really becoming a, I don't want to say a top top-notch in-game coach. But, you know, part of the coaching is recruiting. And,
sure.
You know, he's one of the top 10 in America right now. So I do think he's earned the respect at the very least, and will continue to do so.
You make an interesting point. Typically, guys don't get – and I know it's not Scott's first job, but for the most part, I mean, it's his first job. I mean, he was at Valpo for 1 year. It's not mm-hmm. really – you're not putting your stamp on a program when you just coach it for 1 year. It's not really your recruits, so on and so forth. And you bring up Josh Pastner, which is obviously a place that I understand well because I live in the Memphis area. You know, Josh got this job when he was 30 or 31 years old. I mean, he's basically my age, and I think he maybe is a few months older than I am. And I guess by the time you get to a Big 12 program or a program like Memphis, which is a nationally relevant program with an intense fan base, we sort of think you are what you are and what you're supposed to be. And what we've seen with Scott and Josh both is that they have been put in a position because they got these jobs so young that they are learning on the job. And when you learn on the job in the Big 12 or learn on the job at a place like Memphis, it can be you can deal with a lot of scrutiny. And I guess I didn't realize this at first, but at some point I started thinking, you know, I guess this job at CBS when I was 29 years old. So it's not too different. I mean, it's obviously different professions, different everything. But I guess I would put it this way. I'm not the same columnist I am today that I was when I was 29. You know, I've learned on this job. And, you know, there are some things I used to do that I don't do anymore. There's some things that I do now that I didn't do before. And I would hate to look back and people think, you know, sort of cement whatever opinion they have of me, you know, when I was 29 years old or 30 years old. I've changed, and I imagine you have as well. I know you have as well. And so it's interesting that we all recognize that we, in our own careers, you know, we change from the age of, say, 30 to 35 or 30 to 40. And yet a lot of times we don't give coaches that same leeway to sort of grow up on the job. Now they're heavily compensated, you know, to be scrutinized. But I do think we've seen, and Scott and Josh are good examples, guys who have learned in sort of high profile situations and have become different coaches over the past 5 or 6 years. You'd agree with that, right?
Absolutely. And I think a really good example of that with Scott Drew is on the recruiting trail. I mean, you know, it's well documented that early in his career, he sent out a brochure.
Yeah.
There was a picture of himself and Billy Gillespie and Bob Knight. And it says, which of these coaches has signed a McDonald's All-American in the last year? And there was a big X over Gillespie's face and Knight's face, and Scott circled his name. That was a bad move, you know, and he got called out for it. And I don't think you'll see him do that kind of stuff anymore. And I asked him about that and some of the other stories you hear. He said, yeah, that was a mistake. He goes, but let me ask you this. He goes, I'm coaching at a school in my first year where there was a murder on campus. You know what I mean? He goes, you think they weren't saying bad things about me?
Right.
In my job?
Right.
I mean, that's a great point. I mean, but, you know, when you say something bad about Kansas, oh, that's just breaking a code. But, you know, I mean, it goes on all the time. But I do think that those are things he wouldn't do anymore, and he doesn't have to, because I mean he's had enough success there where it can kind of sell itself. I mean, and they there's a lot of things to like about Baylor, and the other thing is that people just don't understand, I don't think, unless they're from Texas, because so many times you hear people say, oh my God, why would you want to go live in Waco? Or, well, here's why. It's an hour and a half away from home for a kid from Dallas. It's 2 hours and 2.5 hours away from Houston. I mean, a lot of kids want to stay in Texas and play close to home, and they don't want to go far away. And now, well, there's a good option for them, you know, at a school that's experienced some success where they have a lot of freedom with the way they play. I mean, there's a lot of attractive things about it. I mean, we've all been to towns like, I don't think Bloomington, Indiana is much better than Waco, Texas.
Right.
I mean, I don't think Stillwater, Oklahoma is much better than Waco. I mean, it's not like a lot of these colleges are located in primo towns. I mean, so it's not the town, it's the program and the location. And like I said, because of that, they've got a lot to sell.
That's one of the biggest things that people will say, like you and I and people who have jobs like us, we travel around to all of these, quote, college towns. And the truth is there's not a whole lot of difference between them. I mean, you know, from Starkville, Mississippi to Stillwater, Oklahoma to Waco, they're all kind of the same thing. They got the same kind of bars. They got the same kind of restaurants. And then they have a university. And when you're a college basketball player, you know, like when you're say, I don't know, if you were an aspiring actor, you better move to LA or New York or a place like, mm-hmm. If you're a college basketball player, it doesn't really matter where you're at. You're mostly going to be on a campus. And they kind of all look the same. I mean, some are nicer than others. I get all that. But, you know, you have access to all the same type of stuff. You're going to be in a gym. So do you have nice basketball facilities? You're going to play on television. Like, the idea, like, it's the same thing with Nick Saban about living in Tuscaloosa. Like, Nick Saban could live in Tuscaloosa or New York City, and it wouldn't change his day-to-day activities very much. He's going to be in an office watching film, recruiting, preparing. He's going to be on a football field, and then he's going to coach football on the weekends. That's what Nick Saban does. I mean, you could give him access to all the great museums and restaurants in the world. He doesn't need them. It's not, right. And so I think sometimes we do look at college basketball players and go, why would you want to live in Waco or Stillwater as opposed to Los Angeles with UCLA? Well, trust me, all the kids at UCLA, they ain't kicking it around in Hollywood every single night. You know, they're mostly on campus, around campus, in classes, in the facility, so on and so forth. So I think that sometimes gets lost on people. Part of your past also, you mentioned Kansas. You were the Kansas beat writer at the Kansas City Star, and so you probably know that program as well as anybody. In fact, and I think most people know this, you've authored books about KU basketball, one about the 2008 title season, another called Beyond the Fog that features untold stories from KU's basketball's most dominant decade. By the way, anybody listening, if you don't have those books already, you can get them at Amazon.com. If you're a college basketball fan, you really ought to own them. Either way, here's my question for you, and it's a pretty simple question, I guess. What makes Bill Self so great?
Well, I think it's his, well, he's great for a lot of different reasons. His personality and kind of down to earth attitude makes him great for alumni and boosters. And I mean, he's as good of friends with the janitors as he is with the media, as he is with the high powered boosters. He can, you know, kind of make everyone at ease in any setting. But I also think that, you know, everyone just sees this nice guy on camera and off. Cause when you're around him, you think he's really cool, but I mean, he's hard on his players.
Sure.
I mean, he is not what I would call a player's coach. I mean, he's mean in practice, and he goes after these guys, and he does not accept mediocrity in any form. And you know, they never get complacent, and if when they do, it maybe lasts one game. But again, he just kind of has the whole package. I mean, I can't imagine there's many coaches that are better in the living room than Bill Self, you know, with a parent. And, you know, I think he preaches defense, and he's just really good about getting his guys to, and you know, this has been said about Calipari in the past when he's had good teams, but getting his guys to buy into the team concept and just to really not care about how many points they score or rebounds they get. And, you know, he just tells them, you know, when you win, people are going to notice you and they're going to want to draft you, and that people want winners, you know, and you know, you're going to become a better player, not by how many points you score, but, you know, by how many assists you dish out, or how good of a defense you play, or, you know, how many quality shots you take, not how many shots you take, but how many quality shots you take, learning what a good shot is, learning what a bad shot is. He just really, the things he teaches and preaches really sink in. I mean, cause he has that respect level. I mean, other coaches probably say the same thing, you know, to their players, but, you know, he has the ability to get his guys to really listen and buy in. And, I just, you know, he's won more games in the last 10 years, I believe, than anyone in college basketball. Calipari may be ahead of him, but I think when you take out those vacated seasons, I think Self, you know, elevates to the top. So, he's as good as anyone there is right now.
You know, he's really never had a bad basketball team. I mean, and this is a guy who does have to deal with early departures, who does have to deal with, you know, a lot of the stuff where, you know, if Carolina loses four guys early, you go, hey, well, you got to understand, you know, they're probably going to dip a little. Or Kentucky last year having that NIT. Like, that does not happen to Beal. It has not happened to Beal. And you mentioned sort of the down-home, you know, like, a you know, just, you know, good old boy, you know, sort of persona. And it's funny because typically when you get a guy who is as successful as Bill and who recruits at the highest levels that Bill does, and who frankly, you know, gets creative in recruiting. And I mean that as a compliment. Like, he's very smart about how to do the types of things that you got to do to get high level players. And so when, you know, John Calipari gets these labels and Bill Self never really gets them attached to him. And, you know, people will roll their eyes at super successful guys. Like, there are guys who do not like John Calipari in the business, or do not like Rick Pitino or do not like Jim Boeheim or didn't like, you know, Ben Howland or whoever. And yet there aren't really people who just don't like Bill Self. At least I don't hear that often. They all respect him. And he is kind of a, you know, he's just a very approachable guy. And I think that translates to the fans, because he's, I don't want to say he's a normal guy, because he's not. He's a multimillionaire and super famous college basketball coach, but he's about as normal as you can be for a multimillionaire, super famous basketball coach. There was a story one time, a few years ago, you remember when the LeBron James camp was actually in Akron, Ohio? Mm-hmm. So we would spend like 3 or 4 days each summer, each July, in Akron, Ohio. And there just ain't much going on in Akron, Ohio. And, you know, there's a sort of a main street of, like, you know, Applebee's and Chili's and TGI Fridays and all of that stuff. And so after everything was done for the day, you'd wander into a different place and try to get a late meal and maybe a beer or whatever. So one night, I think it was, and this is just sort of to show what the sort of approachable, just sort of normal guy that Bill Self is. It's just a small story, but I remember it as being interesting. I think it was Pete Thamel who was with me. He's obviously at Sports Illustrated now, and maybe Jeff Goodman, who's at ESPN now. And we just want, okay, all right, where are we going? And there's like a TGI Fridays by our hotel or Chili's or something. And we say, okay, we're going to go there. So we walk in, the three of us, and we walk up to the bar, and Bill Self sitting at the bar. Not like drinking at the bar, but because when you're on the road by yourself, you tend to eat dinner at a bar. I mean, you don't rather than get a table by yourself. So I don't mean it like he was at the bar.
Because you're eating late. Yeah,
yeah, you're eating late.
There's not a lot of options. Yeah.
There's not a lot of options. So it's a mostly empty bar. I mean, it's like a Tuesday night in Akron, Ohio, 11:30. And so, like, there's nobody in the place except for the people at the bar. And we walk in, and there's Bill Self. Sitting by, you know, okay, he's not sitting by himself. We think he's sitting by himself. Or no, we don't think. So he's talking to this guy, and he and this guy are having this conversation. Let's call the guy Mike. So we walk in, and Bill's like, hey, you know, how you doing? Gary, Pete, Jeff, whatever. And he goes, hey, this is Mike. Mike, this is Gary Parrish and Jeff Goodman and Pete Thamel. And we're like, hey, Mike, how you doing? And Bill and Mike are sitting there just having a good time, right? Like, they're just, you know, eating dinner and, you know, hanging out and whatever. And so after about 10 minutes, I'm now like talking to Mike like he's, you know, like I think I ought to be or whatever. After about 15 minutes of this, Mike goes, all right, guys, well, I got to get going. I'm like, oh, man, the same thing I would say when anybody says they got to get going. Why you got to go? Come on, have one more beer, whatever. He says, oh, no, I got to get home to my wife. And I'm like, what do you mean get home to your wife? What do you thought? I just assumed this guy like was a basketball coach of some sort, you know, hanging out. He said, oh, no, I was just here getting takeout. And I met Bill. And so we've just been hanging out, but I got to get this food home to my wife. And so the point is, Bill Self was just hanging out with a random dude in Akron, Ohio, who was in there to get takeout for his wife. And I, you know, I guess my point is, that's not something you'd see Mike Krzyzewski do. You know, it was just, and I don't even know if this guy knew who Bill Self was, but they were like best friends. And that sort of, I think that story is an indicator of the type of personality that Bill has.
Well, I think it's great. I mean, a few months ago when Jeff Goodman was in town in Lawrence, he and I went to a practice, and Bill Self said, hey, you guys want to, you know, get some wings after practice, you know, and we go, yeah. So he told us where to meet him, and Jeff and I, believe it or not, Gary, got a little lost on the way to the bar. But when we got there, we walked in, and he was sitting, and this was like, it was wing night at this place called Henry T. So he was in there. In a real crowded place, and of course he draws a lot of attention, so he's sitting there by himself waiting on us, and there's this guy probably 50-ish hammered, okay? And I'm telling you, not to make fun of it, this guy had like 3 T's, and we walked up, and he's like, Bill, I love it there in the game when you just start jacking your jaw and just start getting on them refs. And he's like, hey, did you play at Oklahoma State? He goes, I used to play baseball there back in the 70s or whatever. And Bill's like, oh really, who'd you play for? And the guy's like, man, I can't even remember my coach's name because I've had a few or something like that. So Bill's like, well, let's look him up. So he's on his cell phone looking up past Oklahoma State baseball coaches. The guy's sitting with us having a beer. They're just talking like they're – I mean, you see what I'm saying? Like, a lot of coaches are like, oh, my gosh, drunk fan.
Right.
Loud, annoying. You know what I mean? He didn't act like that at all. The guy just sat there for about 20 minutes, and they just BS'd for a while, and then he went on his way. But you hear stories like that all the time. One time I had an interview scheduled with him at Allen Fieldhouse. I'm walking in there, I can't find him, and I walk past like the janitor's office, you know, janitor's office, little tiny office with mops in the corner. I just happened to kind of just turn my head and look in as I was walking, and I saw Self in there sitting in the seat with his feet propped up on the guy's desk. They're just talking, you know what I mean? So. Right. He, you know, he makes everyone feel important, I think, and that's he's just very likable. I mean, if he ever left there, and maybe that day will come, I think there's going to be a lot of people in a state of depression.
His best player, at least his top-rated prospect this year, is Andrew Wiggins, who has received, I don't know if it's an unprecedented amount of attention, but a lot of attention in the preseason and throughout this early season. Do you think he's going to be a great pro? Do you think he's going to be a really good – like the idea that he's going to be a bust, I just don't buy that at all right? So –
Mm-hmm.
But is he going to be really great, or is he just going to be like, is he going to be Rudy Gay good or 10-time All-Star good?
I would think Rudy Gay good, you know, just based on what I've seen. But it's just, you just get so hesitant to judge a guy after 13 games or whatever. But, you know, it's what we do. And I think that the problem is just, I think he's just kind of a passive, soft-spoken guy that doesn't like the spotlight, doesn't like all the hoopla that surrounds it all. I think he's going to have games in the pros where he scores 30 and everyone's going to get excited. And then I just wonder, you know, how consistently he'll do it. I wonder if he'll ever, you know, how he'll adapt to the spotlight and things of that sort. I don't know. He just doesn't have that killer mentality, you know, that you want to see from your all-stars and the guys that you base a whole team around. I mean, like Jabari Parker, I think, has. And but, you know, I still want to give him time and you know, reserve the right to change my opinion on that, because, you know, the potential is certainly there. You know, I don't think he's a great shooter, you know, by any means, but he does a lot of good things. But it's just, I kind of feel sorry for the kid, because, and I'm guilty of it too, but, you know, it just hasn't been fair. The expectations and that were placed on him were just so out of whack. And I mean, he's still averaging 15 or 16 points a game as a freshman, but he, you know, he just, a lot of his points are kind of quiet, you know, oh, a breakaway dunk that, you know, there was no one guarding him, or a putback layup or something like that. So I think he's going to continue to get better as the season goes on. But right now, if I was drafted, I mean, I think I would probably take Parker over him, and I would take Joel Embiid over him at this point.
You know, you mentioned the personality, and to me, that's the one thing that's concerning. And I don't mean like he's got a bad personality. I mean, he just doesn't have much of one. Like, like Kevin Durant was a killer. You know, even as a freshman at Texas, he was. I remember, I have this image in my head of, I guess it was maybe they were playing at Oklahoma State, and there was like an overtime game or a double overtime game. I can't remember exactly what it was.
Yeah, I remember that.
Okay.
I don't remember the specifics, but I know the game you're talking
okay.
about.
Okay, so there was a time where Connor Ashley, of all people, ended up, you know, with the ball in his hands and took a shot to like win it in overtime or at the end of regulation, and he missed it, like air ball, whatever. It was a bad shot. And Durant, as a freshman, is like – pops him in the back of the head. Not like being mean, but like, you know, like it was just very – he was the leader of that team. He was a killer. He would not accept mediocrity from his teammates. He was vocal. And with Wiggins, you really don't see much of that. I spent a day with him in Lawrence back in the preseason. And like, it was just him, me and him, like, you know, like together for a little while. And he's a sweetheart of a kid. But just doesn't have much to say. Not because he's being rude, but just because there's just not much. He just didn't have much to say. That's what I remember taking away from it. He just didn't have much to say. And, you know, you just sort of contrast that with – I haven't been around Jabari enough one-on-one to know, but I've spent time around Marcus Smart. And Marcus Smart's got a lot to say. And he's got opinions about everything. And he's this engaging personality. And I wonder if that's just part of being young and he'll snap out of it. Or I wonder if it is something that will, you know, keep him from being what his talent suggests he could be. I'm not real sure.
Well, I mean, I think it's a huge deal because, I mean, part of me says, yeah, he's young, give him time, and let Bill Self coax it out of him. But, you know, when it's not in you, it's not in you. I mean, I actually thought Bill McLemore was very similar personality-wise. And, you know, he had a great season but I still don't think he'll ever be a great, you know, year-to-year all-star. But with the great ones that we've seen, like you mentioned Durant or, you know, LeBron James or whoever, I mean, when they were that age at 18 – you know, they had that attitude that we're talking about that's so imperative, I think, if you're going to be that star and the guy that everyone focuses on and rallies around and that you're going to build a team around. And I would just, I think from what I've seen so far, I'd be a little hesitant, you know, to make him my number one guy, but someone will. And, you know, for good reason, because we can nitpick it all we want. He's still one of the more talented guys and athletic guys we've seen in a long time.
You know, you posted your Kings Court column on New Year's Eve, and you ranked the Big Ten as the nation's best league, and I couldn't agree more. I was looking at it just the other day. When you've got a team, and I guess this is the best way I could put it, in Michigan State that was ranked number one nationally just a few weeks ago and is actually the third best team in the Big Ten, according to KenPom, then you've got a strong league. Who do you think wins it this year, Ohio State, Wisconsin, Michigan State, or somebody else?
I still think I like Michigan State the best. I just like their pieces and their, you know, the combination of having really good players and then having good experience and a Hall of Fame coach. I that's still the team I would lean toward picking. And then, as we know, I mean, for the most part in most seasons, Tom Izzo's squad really seems to gel at the right time, which is conference play in the postseason. And I don't want to at all say that I don't like Ohio State or Wisconsin, but I still want to see a little bit more from them. You know, I mean, I still think there's, I don't want to say unknowns, but concerns, not about how good they are, but more so, are they going to be great? You know, I mean, I kind of feel that way about college basketball all around this year. It's entertaining as heck because there's a lot of really good teams, but there's just not that one team that makes you go, wow. You know, they are so good. I mean, they're, you know, penciling in for the Final Four. I mean, I think there's about 10 or 12 of them. And, you know, I think I wrote that in that column. As much as I like the Big Ten and think it's clearly the best league, I don't know if – it still wouldn't shock me if they didn't have the national champion this year, you know, and which they haven't had for since 2000. I don't – do you think it's as good of a league as it was last year? I mean, because last year, I think all season long, we said it was the best league.
I think it was the best league last year. I think it's competitive at the top like it was last year. In other words, you know, Michigan finished fourth in the league and played for the national title. And Michigan finished fourth in the league and was ranked number one in the country at one point last year. I think this is similar, whereas at any point over the next month, theoretically – Michigan State's already been ranked number one. Ohio State could be ranked number one. They're really just a Syracuse and an Arizona loss away from that happening. Wisconsin, you could see being number one as well. I don't know that Iowa could get there, but I think, you know, three different teams could be number one in the country, and Iowa is somebody that the computers love. So I think in the sense that last year the top four were kind of interchangeable, I think this year the top four are kind of interchangeable. Certainly the top three are interchangeable. I do not think this, though. I don't think there's a team in the Big Ten this year that's as good as last year's Indiana team. Now, I understand that Indiana didn't play for the national title, but, you know, that team had I don't want to say a really good point guard because I'm not sure that he was at the time, but certainly a steady freshman point guard in Yogi Ferrell. They had tons of depth. And then they had two, you know, top five picks in Victor Oladipo and Cody Zeller. I don't know that there's a Big Ten team as good as that team. I don't know that there's a Big Ten player this year as good as Trey Burke was last year. But I do think that at the top, it's still pretty strong.
I agree with you. And a lot of times when I'm, you know, when you do those conference rankings, the way I rank conferences – or the deciding factors usually isn't the top, but it's more the middle and the bottom. Right. In other words, how hard are those top teams going to have to play when they play the bad teams or the bottom teams? Like, for instance, I don't think Nebraska is a terrible team.
No.
I don't think they're great, but, I mean, you can't just walk into Nebraska anymore and think you're going to win.
No.
And, you know, Minnesota's better than people thought. I mean, Penn State they were leading, I believe, Michigan State at halftime the other day. And that's where I think the league separates itself because, I mean – like I said, most leagues, you know, like you can look at the SEC, they've got two really good teams. The Pac-12 has two really good teams, kind of like the Big Ten does, although they have three, you know. And, you know, the ACC, you got, you know, Duke and Syracuse and sometimes Carolina. And the Big 12, you got three or four really good ones. But I just think that the Big Ten, all the way to the bottom, except for, you know, maybe Northwestern, who's kind of rebuilding or trying to find itself under a new coach. But that's a dogfight every night in that league.
No, because, like, if you were going to, you know, push it 1 through 12, at the bottom – in whatever order would be the bottom, it would be Northwestern, obviously. And I think that's the one where you can expect to go in and get a win, right? You can expect to go to Northwestern and win. But Purdue just pushed Ohio State for a little while.
Oh, yeah, about Purdue. Yeah.
Okay, so
they look good.
Yeah, and they're sort of at the bottom this year. Penn State, you know, played Michigan State pretty tough for at least a half. Nebraska, though, there's nothing great on its resume. It's not like they're taking, you know, a ton of bad losses. Like, you can't just – they're going to beat – they'll beat a ranked team in Lincoln this year.
Yeah,
like you said, Minnesota's better than people think. Michigan's still, I think, going to be okay even without McGarry. And so Illinois is better than anybody thought. So I think the depth of the league is is something that's going to – we're going to see these teams take road losses, and you'll go, ooh, how'd they lose there? But it's and the other thing that I think makes interesting about this league is – and I wrote this the other day, you know – we always get into the preseason, like coaches on the hot seat or around this time of the year, what jobs are going to open. There's not a single program in the Big Ten that would change coaches right now, I think, even if they could. In other words, you know, at Ohio State, you got Thad Matta, Tom Izzo at Michigan State, John Gross at Illinois, Fran McCaffrey at Iowa, Bo Ryan at Wisconsin, John Beilein at Michigan, Tom Crean at Indiana, Matt Painter at Purdue. Those guys would, like, those are the right guys for those jobs. Like,
reason for optimism and hope at every school. I mean, whether it's this year, like, you know, or like Minnesota for the future, Nebraska for the future, whatever. Yeah, I mean, every program has momentum or reason to be excited.
And that's rare to go through a league and that's not the case in the SEC. It's not the case in the Pac-12. It is the case in the Big Ten. Last thing before I let you go, because you still live, what part of Kansas do you live in? Right outside Kansas City?
Like Overland Park, Kansas. You know, Kansas is right, Kansas City is right on the state line, so I live on the Kansas side. So I live in the Kansas portion of Kansas City.
I'm curious then to ask you this. Wichita State is ranked in the top 10. They're undefeated. Does Wichita State register in Kansas, or is that just a Wichita thing?
It's beginning to. I don't think that you have many people in Kansas that are following them. I mean, excuse me, in Kansas City, following them game to game, and that maybe know all their players. But I think that they've caught people's attention, and they're getting talked about a little bit now on sports radio there and things of that sort. And one of the reasons is because everyone wants to see Kansas and Wichita State play, and Bill Self won't do it. And so there's this big debate, should Kansas play them, and what do they have to gain by playing them? And, you know, Greg Marshall's come out and said some stuff that, frankly, I think people are overreacting to. Like, you know, well, we'd play him, you know, but I mean, what's he supposed to? And I was like, if Greg Marshall would just quit talking about it, well, the only reason he's talking about it is because we're asking him. I mean, he's not like walking around with a megaphone saying, we want to play Kansas, but I mean, people will ask him about it. So anyway, I think that the job he's done there, I mean, is phenomenal. And I honestly think that right now, I mean, like, if you're doing coaching power rankings, you know, and to me, power rankings aren't about who's the best coach. It's about who's the best coach at the moment or who's the hottest coach. I mean, he's one of the top 10 guys out
there. He's great. He's terrific.
I mean, he is so good. And I don't think all this stuff, I mean, people like to say he's kind of quirky or has a weird personality. I mean, I've dealt with him a lot. And there's nothing about him I don't like.
No, you know what? I mean, and that's funny because there is that reputation that exists, right? I don't even know if it's fair or whatever. I just know that there are people who have told me, Greg Marshall, he's a boy, you know, what? Like, he can be. I'm with you. I've dealt with him a lot. There's nothing I don't like about. Like, I've never seen that side of him. The side that some people try to tell you exists. I'm glad to hear you say that because I haven't. I'm not saying it doesn't exist. I'm not with Greg Marshall every day. I've never worked for Greg Marshall. I've never coached against Greg Marshall. But I'm just telling you, I tend to judge people on my dealings with them. And with me, he has been tremendous forever, for as long as I've known him.
Well, I think the one reason people say stuff about him, or maybe one of the reasons, I think, like, he's just real honest and candid sometimes with some of his quotes, you know, like even some of this Kansas stuff he's been saying. And I don't know. I think sometimes he says things in the press that come across the wrong way, or, like, in other words, like, Greg, just, you know, play the PC card here and don't express your feelings. But I like that, though. And not just as a reporter, but I think that his whole, I think, you know, they talk about in Wichita State playing angry. That's their mentality. Sure. I mean, those guys are physical, they're mean, and they play like they don't, like, they play like they, like, no one respects them and they won't respect. I think he coaches that way. I mean, I think, like, he walks around with the same chip on his shoulder that his players do. I mean, he wants to be in the big boys club. You know what I mean? And I don't know if he's there in the terms of some people, but or in the minds of some people, but I just think that there's, I don't know if it's an insecurity or just a chip on his shoulder or whatever, but I think that that mentality has played real well there at that school, and I think his players feed off of it. And, you know, I've heard people say, like, this guy must be cheating or something to have all these good players. Look at the players he has. Right. I mean, like, what was the story last year about Carl Marshall? He was, like, working in a light bulb factory or something for a year. And Clay Anthony Early, I think, was didn't he go to, like, a D3 junior college for a few years? Yeah, I mean, it's not like they're beating out Kansas boys for these guys. I mean, he's taking guys that feel like they have something to prove, guys that maybe feel like they've been slighted. I mean, the best player they have on their team, according to, like, recruiting rankings, is Fred Van Vliet, right, who was, like, the 88th ranked player in his class, who I think chose Wichita State over Northern Iowa and Xavier or something. I don't know. I mean, like, that's what makes it even more impressive. I mean, when those guys are in Final Fours, that's coaching, and as far as getting them to play hard and buy in and have confidence. And they've got a great home court. He's compensated well. I mean, he's got a good thing going. But I do think at some point he's probably going to get a, you know, test his hand at a higher level, and hopefully a school will, you know, look at his quote unquote quirky personality as a plus rather than a negative. Because like, yeah, I said, I think it's worked well for him.
Yeah, and like, you know, first off, like what he did at Winthrop was like remarkable. To win a league, I don't care what league it is, to win a league essentially every single year it suggests you're doing, you got something about you. And it's not like Winthrop has just kept that going since he left, right? Mm-hmm. And so then Wichita State, he gets there his third year, 25 wins, fourth year, 29 wins. Last year, gets the 27 wins. The year after that, 27. Last year, 30. And now is headed for 30 plus again. And I guess, because I've asked people this before, they're like, because they say, oh, great. And I said, explain. I hate it when people just say, well, that guy, like, I want to hear, why do you think that? So I would say, well, why do you think that? Okay. And then they'll go, wow, he's arrogant. And I don't know whether that's true or not, but like, why wouldn't you be arrogant if
you're. Well, so what if it's arrogant? Yeah. You need to be arrogant and confident.
If all you've ever done is one big, which is essentially all he's ever done is win big, like, you'll hear that every once in a while against Bo Ryan, who's another guy who I, like, again, I judge people how they've been around me. Bo Ryan's been awesome with me. If you ask somebody, you ever hear somebody go, so well, why don't you like Bo? If they say, I don't like Bo Ryan, you go, well, why don't you like Bo Ryan? They'll go, wow, he's kind of arrogant. Well, why wouldn't he be arrogant? Like, he is awesome at what he does. Like he takes just, and I don't want to say he just takes guys because they're good players, but it's not like Kentucky's players or Carolina's players you know, whoever, and he wins with them. Because, like, I guess being arrogant when you're awesome doesn't bother me, because, like, I don't understand why you wouldn't be. If you're Greg Marshall, you should be arrogant. If you're Bo Ryan, those guys are awesome at their jobs.
And the other thing is, I think people that say those things are, for the most part, people that have never dealt with them. I mean, it's easy to just sit back and read something or hear something, or kind of like you did with your Scott Drew Nickelback column. Like, one person says it, so everyone says it. Oh, he must be arrogant. I mean, I don't know anyone that knows him semi well that doesn't like him. And I mean, not that I know everyone that knows him, but
sure,
I understand. You know, I just know that everyone that comes in contact with him, whether it's a fan, his players love playing for him. You know what I mean? And the administration says glowing things about him, you know, but, you know, sometimes he'll complain about referees after a game, and then people don't like that. And that's some of the stuff people, you know, might say negatively about him, talk negatively about him. But I don't know. I just think he's as good as, and what's interesting about him too is I thought the team he had 2 years ago, not the Final Four team, but the one before that, I thought that team was better than this team that went to the Final Four last year, when they had Joe Ragland at point guard, I believe Ben Carter and some of those guys. But they played the really good VCU team in the first round or second round or whatever it was, and got beat. And then I remember last season, around this time last season, I think it was actually January 1st, I remember it because it was New Year's Day, he had some injuries, Ron Baker was out, and I got him on the phone. He goes, you know, Jason, he goes, if we can just get through this season, you know, we're kind of in transition mode. But next year, meaning this year, that's when I think we'll really be good. And then he ends up going to the Final Four.
Right.
But my point is, this year has been the year that he's been targeting, you know, and you know, they haven't lost yet, so we'll see what happens.
And on the Kansas-Wichita State thing about them playing, I know Greg and Bill have sort of gone back and forth, not directly at each other, but indirectly in the press. And I think this is where I stand on that. If I'm Bill Self, let's start here. If I'm Greg Marshall, I would absolutely be trying to talk about publicly about getting a game with Kansas and trying to put pressure on Kansas to play me. If I'm Bill Self, I'd never play the game. And so I actually think both of those guys, given their jobs, are doing the right thing. Greg's trying to get the game, and Bill is rejecting it based on, I got nothing to gain from doing that. So I think they're both probably handling it the right way, even if maybe Wichita State fans want Bill to be. Bill Self is doing the best thing for Kansas, and Greg Marshall's doing the best thing for Wichita State. And the problem is, those two things don't happen to be the same thing.
I got one question and one comment. My comment is this. Greg Marshall has said exactly what you just said. He goes, you know, he said this like last year when it first came up, and I think he might have just told me this like in conversation. I don't think I was quote. He goes, if I were Bill Self, I wouldn't do it either.
Right.
I mean, not because Bill Self's scared, but just because he, like you said, he has nothing to gain.
Nothing.
You know what I mean? And he goes, I don't really blame him. You know what I mean? So I don't think he's running around saying, oh, they're scared of players or whatever, you know. But my question is, like, why, like, when you say you don't have anything to gain, like, why don't you think they should play him?
If I'm, I first off, when you're a program like Kansas, where you have a stadium that's going to, an arena that's going to be filled, a field house in this case, it's going to be filled to capacity, mm-hmm. You got to have a certain amount of buy games, you know, for season ticket holders and to, you know, pay the bills and that kind of stuff. So you only have a small number of, to play, quote, you know, games that either aren't your conference games or your bye games, right? And whatever that number is, it's usually going to be an exempt tournament, some neutral court event, and then maybe a couple of home and homes. And if you're a program like Kansas, you can get, I guess a few years ago, they had the UCLA home and home. You know, you can get opportunities like that. One of them's the Champions Classic, then you go to a tournament, and then how many other, quote, big games can you get? And maybe it's two, three, if you're pushing it. And given that you have that small of a number, some of it out of your control because of finances. You have to play the bye games because you got to have a certain amount of home games. I just think that you probably don't benefit as a program playing Wichita State. And then beyond that, if you lose, if you win, people say, hey, it's Kansas and Wichita State. You're supposed to beat Wichita State. And if you lose, it becomes this loss that starts to work against you. I just think in those – I would, like, in my job, I'd love to see them play the game. If I'm Bill Self, there's no way I'd ever do it.
Well, I think the last part of what you were saying is probably true, because, like, everyone wants to see them play at the Sprint Center, which is the big arena in Kansas City, so he can say, you know, we've got them in the game by playing them there. Well, you know, they played Oregon State there last year, where they had the game by playing Oregon State. No, so I think that's just the point where you don't want to start getting beat by them and you know, how people say bad things about you. But I'm not saying that Wichita State would beat them. They probably wouldn't. But selfishly, I'd like to see the game. I'd like to see Kansas play Missouri every year, too. But right. It's not happening, and he knows a lot more about that kind of stuff than I do. So,
well, listen, man, I've taken enough of your time, I think. So let me wrap this up by telling you, thanks for being here on the day after the Fiesta Bowl, waking up early in Phoenix, Arizona, and dealing with me. I appreciate it, man.
No problem. I hope to catch up with you down the road here soon.
I'll see you soon. And everybody else, I do appreciate you guys being here on the podcast, CBSSports.com. You know, and not just being here, but reading what I write, interacting on Twitter. You can find Jason on Twitter, by the way, at Jason King BR. That's at Jason King BR. And remember, go subscribe to the Eye on College Basketball podcast. That's on iTunes. It's the quickest way to make sure you get the latest edition of the Eye on College Basketball podcast. So do that. And either way, I'll talk to you again really soon.